This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
An amazing way to cap the college basketball season. I'm so thrilled we had March Madness this year. You've heard me say it over and over. I know you are as well. I don't even care how my brackets looked, though. Once again, I did get an update from our family bracketologist, and I think I was second to last. I had moved up one spot in the family pool. I have no idea who won the After Hours Bracket Challenge, but we'll have to track that information down and share it with you before the end of the show. Whoever won the After Hours Bracket Challenge, we will reach out to, and you'll have the opportunity to join us live for an edition of Ask Amy Anything. And on that edition, when you join us live, you will get to ask your own questions. So we'll do our best to reach you. I think last year we tried and couldn't get a hold of the winner. So sometimes we can't, but we'll do our absolute best. Thanks for participating in the After Hours Bracket Challenge. It's After Hours on CBS Sports Radio from the Rocket Mortgage Studios. When you need an expert to help navigate the home loan process, Rocket can. We're asking you, in light of the Sam Darnold trade to Carolina, if you're the Panthers, knowing what you know right now, who would be your starter? Darnold or the incumbent, Teddy Bridgewater? And maybe the Panthers draft a quarterback at number 8, which would be kind of crazy. But they do have the number 8 overall pick, unless they would choose to trade out of that slot. So find the poll on Twitter, A-Law Radio. Also on our Facebook page, After Hours with Amy Law. It's our phone number, 855-212-4227. That's 855-212-4CBS.
Patterson will put the brakes on and dribble this one out. And the Baylor Bears do indeed bear down to knock off the unbeaten Gonzaga Bulldogs and claim the school's first men's basketball championship.
I'm like a proud parent. I get to sit back and give all the credit. First of all, God really blessed this team and blessed us with this championship, and how everyone's put the teammates first. You look at all the players that for the last 18 years helped build toward this, our administration that gave us the resources necessary to get to this point, and then obviously our fans and the city of Waco.
Took Scott Drew 18 years, but he turned the Baylor Bears men's basketball program into a champion. The final call with Kevin Kugler on the Westwood One NCAA Radio Network. And from Indiana, we are pleased to welcome Jerry Palm of CBS Sports, who was in the stands at Lucas Oil Stadium as a fan. So overall, what we saw with Baylor in the Final Four, not just against Gonzaga tonight, Jerry, but also against Houston, a dominant performance there as well. What was your reaction?
No, not at all. Well, Baylor was a team that we thought all year prior to their COVID break in, I want to say February, you know, they were, them and Gonzaga were 1-2. Everybody thought those were the two best teams in college basketball, and there was a gap between those two and everyone else. And as it turns out, maybe that gap was between Baylor and everyone else. But, of course, you can't overreact to one game. But Baylor was definitely dominant from the opening tip of this game and just took it to Gonzaga every way they could. And their guards were better. But to me, the stats that stood out were, you know, offensive rebounds, 14 for Baylor and yes, only 1 for Gonzaga, and 14 turnovers for Gonzaga and only 7 for Baylor. And to me, that was the biggest difference in the game, was the second chance opportunities and the lost possessions for Gonzaga in a game where they, you know, were trying to come back from the very beginning of the game.
They managed to cut it to 10 at half, and then early in the second half got it as low as 9. But Baylor then hit a couple of threes, and the Bears were off and running. The general consensus on social media, which you can take or leave, is that the Zags looked tired. They looked fatigued from that battle against UCLA on Saturday night. What was your impression?
Oh, I don't know about that. They just weren't as sharp as Baylor was. I mean, Baylor came out firing. They were hitting their three-pointers. Their defense was tight. Their rebounding was good. I don't know if Gonzaga was tired or I couldn't really – Mark Few would be able to answer that question, but I don't think the energy level was bad. The execution level was bad. Gonzaga's execution just wasn't there. They were sloppy with the ball. They weren't boxing out. But I didn't think they were slow. They didn't look tired. They just looked like they just didn't know what they were doing for most of the first half.
We saw some of that against UCLA, didn't we? We saw them go through stretches where they couldn't hit a shot and where the Bruins were able to score at will.
Well, the difference was they weren't turning the ball over a lot. They weren't giving up a bunch of offensive rebounds. They weren't as sloppy as they were in the game tonight. Tonight was just a game where they were just giving the ball up. And they weren't rebounding. They weren't boxing out. And I don't know if it's a strength for Gonzaga or not. They haven't really been challenged in this way all year. So it's hard to say. It's hard to draw conclusions on what it takes to beat Gonzaga when you only lose once. Mm. So, you know, and Baylor played at such a high level today that it's just their day. Sometimes it's the other team's day. And Baylor is an outstanding team all season long and was very good again tonight.
The thrill of victory and the agony of defeat. And for Mark Few and Gonzaga, yet another opportunity. This may be their best one ever as the number one overall seed being undefeated. I'm sure it does not make them feel any better that William Hill has instituted the Bulldogs as the favorite to win next year's title. But your reaction to them getting this far and then again being unable to win that title?
Well, it's not easy. You know, it's no coincidence that it's been 45 years since somebody went undefeated. And that's what they were trying to do tonight. And tonight was just their bad day. It's not an easy thing to do to get through 6 games of an NCAA tournament and win the whole thing, no matter how good you are. They were an outstanding team this season. But all season long, we thought Baylor was right there with them. So we shouldn't be surprised that Baylor was able to beat them. And in this case, they beat them pretty handily. But it's not any sort of indictment of what's going on at Gonzaga or any reflection on this season that they had. You know, it was one of those days where they got beat by a team that's probably just as good and had a better day.
Just happened at the worst possible opportunity when you're on that national championship stage. Jerry Palm of CBS Sports was in the building at Lucas Oil Stadium for tonight's game between Baylor and Gonzaga and joins us here after hours on CBS Sports Radio. Where were you sitting? What was your perspective?
I was sitting in the Baylor end zone, if you think of it as a football field.
Yes.
Their bench was to my right. Their basket was in front of me. And we were at the bottom of the upper level. So, but it was, you know, I saw the Baylor-Houston game there. I saw the Houston-Rutgers game there. And I saw a game at Mackey Arena. But of the 3 games I saw at Lucas Oil, this one had definitely the most energy from the crowd. I think it had the biggest crowd as well of the 3 games I was at. It's not the same as playing in a full stadium or even close. But it was nice to be in a gym with fans that were really, you know, into this game. It was a lot of fun to be at a game like that again. I'm looking forward to going to see baseball this summer. I really am looking forward to football this fall when maybe we are far enough along that we can have a full stadium, but I'll take what I can get right now. And it was nice to get some energy from the fans tonight, mostly the Baylor fans. because they jumped out so fast early and dominated the game.
I love that you just called Lucas Oil Stadium a gym.
Well, for this purpose, it is. Yeah. I've been in there for a football game, and I've been in there for basketball games, and I've been in there for a soccer game, and I've been in there for band contests. So it's a multi-purpose facility, but tonight it was a gym.
Well, let's talk about those Baylor fans, because at the end of the game, I had switched to radio, and I was listening to Kevin Kugler, PJ Carlissimo on the Westwood One NCAA radio network, and the fans came through loud and clear, and it was so evident they were real people and not cardboard cutouts with the fake crowd noise. I thought it was awesome. It sounded so authentic, and it was music to my ears, Jerry.
Yeah. Really, the only thing that's missing is the pep bands. And the legitimate fight songs and the energy that those organizations provide. But yeah, the fans were great. Both teams in the stadium, were excited, and obviously Baylor fans for most of the game were excited. And I was in the Baylor, fan area because their bench was in front of us. So there was more energy there. But also on the streets of Indianapolis before the game, a couple hours or so before the game, the fans were engaged and energetic in the restaurants. Everybody was excited for the game coming up, but in the building too, the energy was very different, even than previous NCAA tournament games this year, where we had some fans at the game.
Scott Drew took over at Baylor 18 years ago, and in his first three seasons, the Bears won a total of 21 games, Jerry. So he was rebuilding from scratch, from the ground up. And the name Drew, the family Drew, is basketball royalty. And so we know that he's got the pedigree for sure. But what does he bring to the table as a coach in his own right?
So Scott, I know the Drews because I live 25 miles from Valpo. And have been there several times and have gotten to know them a little bit. Scott is just a high energy guy, hyper positive guy. He's always positive. There are no dark clouds in Scott Drew's world. It seems like he's always keeping things up, keeping things positive, keeping things looking forward. The program that he took over, it would be generous to have called it an unmitigated disaster. It was.
Yes.
It was
in the pit.
It's the worst. It was the worst program, the shape any major college program had probably ever been in, and to get it, it took 18 years, to get it built up to where it was a consistent power, and now a national power, and now a national champion. It's a remarkable build, and it probably took someone with the level of positivity and optimism that Scott Drew has to get this thing going and in the way that it has. I'm thrilled for Scott. It's a remarkable accomplishment for him, a great achievement, and a long, long time coming. And probably 18 years ago, he was the only person who probably saw that this was possible.
Mm. And considering where the program was, it wasn't just about the basketball. It was about the crimes that Dave Bliss was involved in and what the team had gone through and what the students along with it. So, yes, Scott Drew was a reclamation project, but that positivity certainly carried him through. Jerry Palm is with us here after hours on CBS Sports Radio. Now, knowing what you know of Mark Few and everything he's been through at Gonzaga, how does he recover from this?
He's got another five-star recruit coming next year. He's leading on the number one recruit coming in next year in college basketball. Gonzaga basketball is going to be fine, but they're going to be good again next year. William Hill installed him as a favorite. I guess I'm not surprised by that. They're going to be good. They're going to get another shot. I'm convinced that one of these days, Mark Few is going to have his day like this, and he's going to have a championship next to his name. It's what he's done at Gonzaga is remarkable because it doesn't normally happen this way. At schools like Gonzaga, you get good and your coach is gone. Somebody hires him away, but he's stuck around through a couple of decades to build it up like this. His day is coming. Gonzaga's day is coming. The program is in fine shape, and it's going to continue to get better. And one of these days, he'll be the one cutting down the nets.
We had confetti. We had TV cameras. We had the fans. We had a tournament, the crowned champion on the night that was supposed to happen, that was originally scheduled. But certainly this wasn't a tournament like any other, Jerry. You were there. You've been not only to games, but as you mentioned, walking around the city. How do you think Indianapolis coped? And how do you think the NCAA coped with these unprecedented circumstances?
I said before the tournament, before the selection Sunday, that I thought it was unrealistic to think that the NCAA could select the 68 teams it wanted to select and then play 67 games with those teams without any hiccups. And they almost did. You know, they picked the field they wanted and then just had one game canceled due to COVID out of the 67. It went probably better than they could have even realistically hoped for. And the city of Indianapolis was really the best place to try and do this. It helped that they were already preparing for a Final Four this year. But Indianapolis is a great basketball town. Mm. It's equipped to hold an event of this scale, and it worked. Could not have worked any better as it did this year in Indianapolis. To the point where you think, hey, we ought to do this some other time. But no, we need the tournament all over the country. Everybody should enjoy this.
It's a the type of situation where because of what happened last spring, every school, every program has a story. You could talk to, say, Liberty men's basketball, and they had 30-plus wins a year ago, and they were going to cruise into the tournament and finally get an opportunity to build, right? But Baylor's got one of those stories because they won 23 games in a row in 2020 and would have entered the NCAA tournament as a top seed, which I kind of feel like gives this victory an even sweeter layer to it because they had to wait another year, as every school did. But to win your first national championship in men's basketball and to have it come with essentially a year delay, not knowing if you'd have the opportunity to put together a team or to have a team that was as good. I love that element to it. Through the adversity, kind of rising, you know, through some of these challenges that we've never seen before.
Yeah, and hopefully never see again.
Yes,
you're right. Though I mean, Baylor was going to be a number one seed last year had the tournament gone off. There's no doubt that they would have been one of the favorites in last year's tournament. They didn't get a chance to play it. I feel more for teams like Dayton, who had a generational team, but whereas Baylor probably was going to be good again this year, and obviously was good again this year. Mm-hmm. But you're right. I mean, they take frustration and turn it into accomplishment. And that's something, that certainly does have to make it sweeter than had it just happened last year.
Mm. We don't always love the character building moments, but this certainly was one of them, not to mention fostering leadership and maturity and preparing them for whatever pressure and adversity they might face this year, which includes that 3-week shutdown because of the COVID protocols. So, Jerry, up next in college sports on the large scale would be back to football. How confident are you, because football is the other sport that you really bury yourself in, how confident are you that the upcoming football season is going to go off more closely to what we're used to, more typical than what we had last season?
Yeah, I don't know if we're going to have full stadiums or not. Some places are. Like I think Alabama is preparing for full stadiums. I hope we get to that point. I think we're going to see something that is much closer to normal than we have seen in the last couple of years. And I really hope for that. I want to see marching bands on the field and in the stands. I want to see, full-ish crowds as much as we can and get into a stadium. I want to see the energy of a full stadium and a really full college football season where we're not worried week to week, are we going to get to play all these games?
Right. Well, that's the big thing. As much as I agree with you about fans and certainly marching bands near and dear to your heart, but just not having to see a dozen or more games called off every weekend.
I don't want to spend any time tracking cancellations this fall.
Yes.
And I spent way too much time tracking cancellations in both sports this fall and spring. And I would be perfectly happy to never have to do that again.
Your 20th championship game? That's amazing.
Yes. Yeah. I've I've been to every one since 2002, so that would be 19 in a row, because obviously we skipped last year, and then I was at the 91 final in Indianapolis.
Well, you can see the T-shirt that Jerry is sporting on his Twitter at JP Palm CBS. Jerry, I know you got to go to this game with your beautiful wife, which is great. I'm sure that it was wonderful, but I still feel like the game that Villanova won with the buzzer beater, where we were there in Houston, yeah, and we got to experience it together, has to be up there on the list somewhere.
Oh, yeah. Well, and Chris Jenkins comes running up into the stands, like, you know, up the media row. I'm sitting on the end of an aisle, and he's running right past me to his mom. I could have tripped him, which would have been, you know,
awful,
a bad idea.
Yes.
But yes, but yeah. So the being on the floor aspect of watching a game, you know, and the, some of the angles I've had on different, you know, some of these great moments, like his moment, Gordon Hayward's shot, things like that. It's a lot different down there on press row than it is up in the 500 level of Lucas Oil.
For sure. But this was a memorable season. As you say, we're not going to see another one like it. And so you were there, which I think is history, something that you can always talk about. All right. So follow him on Twitter. And it's always great to catch up with you, Jerry. Thanks so much for the insight.
Oh, thanks very much for having me on again.
Pretty cool to say that you were there in the arena for what is an atypical championship. Let's hope an aberration and not the norm. I tend to believe that Jerry is correct, that by the time we get to football season and then subsequent basketball season again, life will be much closer to what we're used to in the world of sports and outside the world of sports. But I always identify sports as a microcosm of real life. So it's great that Baylor was able to use the experience of the last 2 years. And as Jared Butler said, fight through adversity. He said he'd never been on a team that was so bonded and was so together, operating as one unit. And that's special. It really is. It's not something you can just snap your fingers and create. Locker rooms like that don't come along every day. It's that chemistry that you know it when you experience it, when you see it, even when you're part of it. But there's no tried and true formula to create it. Though very often going through failures, difficulties, disappointments, going through a pandemic together, these all create this type of reliance on the guy to your left, the girl to your right, or in the case of a team, your teammates all around you. It can bring people together who have the same goal. And I love that about sports. It's similar to a corporate synergy, where the sum is greater than the individual parts. You do the math. But Baylor captured that and used the disappointment, used the cancellation of last year's tournament to bring them together. And some of these guys came back. They could have left school and they came back to play. All of them bonded together in not just their pursuit of this common goal, but in their disappointment of not having the chance a year ago. And as I said to Jerry, many schools have similar stories. Baylor just happens to be the last one standing.
You are listening to the After Hours Podcast.
Two receivers to the left, one to the right. Darnold, rush coming. Darnold avoids it, steps up. Darnold looking to run again. Oh, what a fake at the 45. He's to the 40, 30, 25, 20. Sam Darnold could go. He's in for the touchdown. A brilliant run. Major highlight for Sam Darnold.
He was
dead to rights, and he turns it into six.
It's time to pull on the pads and hit somebody. on After Hours with Amy Lawrence, CBS Sports Radio.
I was there. I was there, and the entire press box broke out in laughter. And you could probably hear the laughter down on the field because there was no one else at MetLife Stadium when this happened on a Thursday night. And I happened to get a credential for Broncos Jets because it wasn't a Sunday. So with just one game taking place, I could go and not have to worry about all the other storylines to follow on a Sunday. And so I drove right up and parked maybe 100 yards from the gate. And when I say I drove right up, not even one car in line in front of me. It was, I've never been to a stadium like that before with zero traffic and then zero fans in the stadium. And there they are in the first quarter. And Sam Darnold takes off running. It was the most dynamic play of the entire game, a 46-yard run. I had no idea Ian Eagle was also there. We weren't allowed to talk to anyone. People avoided you like you had the plague. On the Westwood One radio network, I saw it. And now Sam Darnold is traded, which is disappointing, I think, for him, because he wanted to be part of the Jets organization. He wanted to see this through, and I appreciate that about him. Though, once he gets over the disappointment of not being chosen and having to pick up and start over, he has an opportunity here to rebuild or resurrect the opinions of him and also to become a viable starter in the league. But certainly, he's going to have to get over and swallow kind of this feeling that the Jets think there's a better option. There's a rookie out there, and this brand new coach and Robert Saleh didn't want him.
I want to be a Jet for life. I love the people here. I love living here. And I want to turn this thing around. I believe that we can. There's going to be a lot of work involved in that. And we all know it's a process.
How many people actually want to be part of the building? How many people want to stick around when the going is tough? Oh, a lot of people want to hit the road, Jack, and would rather go somewhere where it's an easy fix or where it's easier, not a long track record of losing. But that's not what Darnold said, and I believe him. I think he likes New York, and I think he appreciates a challenge. Not to mention, he's invested here, not with this coach, but with these teammates. But a lot of change, a lot of transition. I don't think he got a fair shake. And I think it's really difficult to evaluate a guy when you don't have pieces around you, quality pieces around you. So here are the Jets, who took a detour called Adam Gase. And now, actually, it probably did more damage to Darnold than it did good. And now they've got a coach that a lot of people believe really is the guy to change the culture and to create a competitor, maybe not a winning team initially, but a competitor, similar to what Joe Judge is doing with the Giants. And yet they want to start fresh, which makes sense when you're a head coach and you've got a GM that's handpicked you and this is not your quarterback. It makes sense that you would want your own choice. But if you're Darnold, it doesn't make it feel any better. Although Charlotte's great. I hope he enjoys the Carolinas. I hope he sees that there is life after the Jets. Although moving now into the NFC South. Oh, look, he and Brady back in the same division again. That's fun. Anyway. The Panthers have an uphill climb, and I don't know yet what they're going to do. Some of you are saying that you believe Bridgewater is gone. He won't even be there. But where are you going to send him? That doesn't really make sense to me because you don't yet know for sure that Darnold can be a starter or that he's an upgrade from Bridgewater. You haven't even seen him other than on tape or in a game in which you competed against him. But I don't know that at this point right now, Sam Darnold's some great upgrade over Bridgewater. Plus, Bridgewater knows Matt Rhule and has now had a year in that system with the Panthers. And I think they want options. I don't think they're trading Bridgewater unless they find out that Sam has made this meteoric rise and is prepared to take over as their starter. And also, where would you trade him? What are you going to get for him? You might as well keep him. You gave him a contract. You might as well keep him for now. Though there is still the possibility the Panthers could choose another quarterback. You know the old cliche, if you have three or four or five quarterbacks, you don't actually have a quarterback. So take our poll on Twitter, After Hours CBS, or my poll, A-Law Radio, my poll, haha, my Twitter with the poll. And then on our Facebook page, you're answering the question. Snarky as usual, but some of you have come up with some good points. 855-212-4227. That's 855-212-4CBS. Also, I have another question for you. I actually posed it earlier on social media, and the responses were interesting. I'll explain.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
You are listening to the After Hours Podcast.
I think we're all on the same page of where we stand. And, you know, I'll let Coach kind of handle what the pecking order is and what the plan is. But overall, the whole idea of bringing Sam in was to raise the competition level at the position and get to where we need to be.
Here you make the call, not the refs. Light up Amy's phone lines now. 855-212-4CBS.
Carolina Panthers general manager Scott Fitterer talking about the trade for Sam Darnold, and he mentions the word competition and seems to allude to the fact that between Sam Darnold and Teddy Bridgewater, they hope there is a competition that causes each of those quarterbacks to elevate his play. Doesn't sound like there's any consensus decision, or maybe they're just keeping it close to the vest. We know that David Tepper was desperate to upgrade at the quarterback position. They were still recently having internal talks about Deshaun Watson and whether or not they should make another push to trade for Deshaun with the Texans. Initially, they'd been rebuffed. So according to multiple reports out there, even as recently as the last few days, there were more internal discussions with the Panthers front office about whether or not they should try to trade for Deshaun again. They ultimately decided that wasn't a path they wanted to pursue. And so they go next best thing, which is a trade for Sam Darnold. Darnold became available once the Jets decided that they would draft a quarterback number two overall. There had been some speculation they might trade out of that number two spot. Maybe that they would select a different position of need. But now it's pretty obvious. We may not know the quarterback by name. Most of the industry believes it's Zach Wilson. The Jets have had multiple virtual meetings with Zach. And by trading away Darnold, they make it obvious they are going to select a quarterback because now they don't have one. So, you know, kind of an important position on the field. I actually am fascinated by the results of the poll to this point. Very close, very tight balloting. So check it out on Twitter, A-Law Radio. And then also on our Facebook page. Some of you are waffling. Some of you have no idea. Some of you wish there was a third option. Some of you are being snarky and thinking Cam Newton should go back to Carolina. We know that ship has sailed. So which quarterback? At this point, I get it, it's April. At this point, which quarterback has the nose in front for that starting job, Sam Darnold or Teddy Bridgewater? 855-212-4227. That's 855-212-4CBS. Speaking of Deshaun, I have a question. And this is an honest question, but there's also implication behind it. And I will explain the implication. I got quite a reaction to this when I put it on Twitter on Monday afternoon. But again, I'm being somewhat serious. How many massage therapists does one man need? We know there are, at this point, 40 of them who have come forward, whether in support of Deshaun Watson, indicating that they did not experience anything nefarious with him, anything that they would consider harassment or sexual assault. You've got 18 at last count women who've come forward to support Deshaun. You've got 22 who've now filed civil lawsuits. Not to mention there are other women out there who've shared their testimonies or their accounts with, say, Sports Illustrated, but haven't actually filed suit. So more than 40 different massage therapists going back to 2019. From my understanding, working in the industry, but also as an athlete, and really what I've heard from a lot of pro athletes over the last couple of weeks, we know athletes are creatures of habit. And generally when they find a therapist, an athletic trainer, I mean, think about Tom Brady, his track record with Alex Guerrero. Athletes want to know that it's going to be that same routine, that same repetition. When they find something that works, they stick with it. Some guys, like say a LeBron James, has his own massage therapist come on the road with him. Other athletes will actually see their massage therapist hired by their franchises. Many of them will also use the massage therapists that are provided by their teams and not pay extra for them. And this strikes me as so odd. Over the course of a couple of years that Deshaun Watson couldn't find a massage therapist that he was comfortable with, so he just kept finding new ones on Instagram and Snapchat. Snapchat. Maybe I am the most uncool chick in the world. I would cop to that. But Snapchat? Is that how professional massage therapy is done these days? You find a therapist on Snapchat? I wouldn't find a hairdresser on Snapchat. I wouldn't find a psychologist on Snapchat. Why the hell would you find a masseuse on Snapchat? But I digress. Again, I'm old and I'm uncool. How many massage therapists does one man need? It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. If you have experience with massage therapy, I would really like to hear from you. Because it seems to go against what most athletes do, which is find a routine, find people they're comfortable with, and stick with them. Those of you who are women who are listening, this is a little bit like finding a hairdresser. Or if you use a makeup artist, finding a makeup artist. When I first moved to the New York City area, I was nervous about finding someone new to do my hair. Do you know for 4 years, I've been here now into my ninth year, for 4 years, I drove 2 hours one way back to Connecticut to go to the same hairdresser. And for 4.5 years, I drove 2 hours one way to go to the dentist. Now that sounds ridiculous, I get it, but that's how much of a creature of habit I am. When I find someone who knows me, when I find someone I'm comfortable with, I have a loyalty as well. I like to give my business to people who treat me well. For more than 4 years, I drove 2 hours one way back to Connecticut multiple times a year for the dentist and the hairdresser. maybe Deshaun Watson's just different. And he wanted different massage therapists, or he couldn't find one that he liked. It's amazing to me that the team wasn't involved. Actually, I take that back. The team was involved in part of this. There are a couple of massage therapists that were either recommended by the team or that also did work for the team who have now filed civil lawsuits and complaints. We are supposed to hear from the attorney who's representing the majority of those who are complaining against Watson on Tuesday. Tony Busby is scheduled to hold another press conference. And when I tweeted this on Monday, I got the general sarcasm and the jokes back. But I also got people who still think it's a conspiracy theory. And I would just like one of you to call. Just one. Because I'd like to have this conversation. There are people who believe the Texans are doing all of this, hiring these women to make false complaints through this attorney, Tony Busby, just to smear Deshaun's name. And yet you would rather believe that than the fact that Deshaun Watson's capable of this. Now, I don't know how this ends up. These are civil lawsuits. It's really difficult to prove with any type of veracity, because it's a he said, she said situation. These are notoriously the most difficult cases to prove. And what kind of physical evidence would there be other than testimony and text messages? But to believe that the Houston Texans are hiring women, committing fraud and committing crimes to smear their quarterback, why? So they don't have to trade him? They don't have to trade him! They own his rights. They don't have to trade him. Why bother committing a crime to smear your quarterback when you're in a position of power and leverage? I don't get it. Please, somebody call me and have this debate with me.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Football fans, the NFL draft is almost here, and the free Odyssey app brings you the latest coverage from the biggest sports radio stations across the country. Which players will help your team the most? Who will make a draft day trade? Will they be ready for week one? The local conversations about the team you love, all streaming free right here on the Odyssey app. AUDACY. Download it today.